behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
And I am Ben. We are joined, as always, by our super producer, Noel Crash Brown.
Hey.
Okay, all right. So Noel is sort of here, but sort of not here. He is actually doing a double duty, recording a very special episode of Tech Stuff, which we hope you guys get a chance to check out in the future.
He's a busy guy.
He is a busy guy. He's a renaissance man when it comes to this stuff.
Sometimes he edits two podcasts simultaneously.
Yeah, we're not fooling with you. You can see this guy wearing two sets of headphones, and he has them sort of crisscrossed over his head, right? You've seen this.
Oh, I have. It's an incredible feat. A lot of us around here, you know, every time we mention something like he's so busy or whatever, and then we'll kind of like whisper each other, like, do you know that he sometimes edits two podcasts at one time with two sets of headphones?
Right, right.
How is that possible? I mean, imagine having like two phone conversations while you're holding two different phones up to your ears at the same time. That's exactly what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
Only add the complexity of trying to put it all together on the screen in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing job he does.
It's impressive for sure.
It definitely is.
And what we are talking about today is also impressive. As you know, Noel's nickname is your clue to the episode's theme for those of you who didn't read the title or just have this on shuffle or something. So Crash Brown, what could that be? Crash
what
Brown.
What could it possibly be? Well, we're going to talk about some cars that have been involved in crashes.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is strange, Ben. There are 9 car models that have had 0 traffic deaths for something like, is it 4 or 5 model years?
Mm-hmm.
4 model years.
4 model years.
4 model years. And I want to get this out ahead of time just so that we're clear on this. When they talk about 0 traffic deaths in these vehicles, these particular cars, there are
mm-hmm.
9 of them. We're also going to talk about the bad, by the way. We're talking about no driver fatalities because the information about the passengers is unavailable unavailable at the time because this article is from the Detroit Free Press back in January of 2015. So it is current. It's this year.
Right.
In 2015. And it's going, from model year 2009 through 2012 because, you know, this data, as you'll find, I've tried many times to search traffic death numbers this
mm-hmm.
year because of the staggering number of traffic deaths we've got. In fact, I've got a little bit of an update on that is very current as of this morning.
Yeah.
But when you try to search stuff like that, you'll find that the data doesn't really get compiled and sifted and sorted until maybe a couple of years later.
At best.
Yeah, because some of the stuff that I'm finding when I'm searching for 2015 numbers is from like 2011. This study goes all the way through 2012, and it's pretty conclusive in the makes and models of vehicles that are the safest, and a few that are on the bottom end of this that are the ones that don't quite cut it. And I guess maybe you stay tuned to find out if you're in either one of these categories.
Right. And if you're listening to this as you drive, drive safely, ladies and gentlemen, even if you're in the number one, one of those top 9 cars. But let's go ahead and take a little bit of a look at the background here before we dive into this.
Sure.
Longtime listeners, you will remember that Scott and I have done an episode on the so-called death-proof car,
mm-hmm.
right? And what's a death-proof car in concept?
Well, in concept, it would be that it is invulnerable in some way, that, you know, it could go through any number of situations and
mm-hmm.
the passengers, the occupants, would be completely safe. I mean, that's what automakers are striving for, but they can't quite achieve because you can add 100 airbags to a car. You can
right.
have any kind of safety restraints that you want. There's always going to be a situation where something is going to be able to penetrate that barrier in some way and cause a fatality, whether it's an occupant that's not using some of those safety features that the manufacturers include, like safety belts.
Sure.
Or if you know, just unforeseen circumstances, like this is horrible. You run into a post or a sign that is acts like a spear,
yeah.
Or you drive into a lake, or you know, whatever.
Right.
I mean, there's a multitude of situations that every these manufacturers can't account for every single thing that could possibly happen to an automobile or a truck on the road.
Yeah. Now, Volvo, for instance, has quite a reputation for safety, and they spend quite a lot of time and boatloads of money, truckloads of money, I guess would be a more appropriate phrase, trying to sort of predict these situations, the likelihood and what they would need. But when it comes down to brass tacks, when the rubber hits the road, what we are talking about when we talk about cars is propelling a pretty sturdy thing at a high speed in an area where there will always be some sort of external potential danger. So a death-proof car is practically impossible to create. The best thing we can do, we being just people in general, is to manufacture cars that minimize those risks to the best degree. And that goes into one of the stranger episodes we've done, which was automobile testing.
Oh, yes.
Which is a classic.
That would be an old one. You know, I think that the one that you just mentioned, too, the death-proof car episode, mm-hmm. I believe that was back in January of 2009, and that was when we were still high-speed stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that the car testing one that you're talking about, or the crash testing one, rather, is also in the high-speed stuff days, because that
still
was early
that era, yeah.
Yeah, we were pretty excited about talking about that one.
Oh, man, that was creepy.
A little bit of a morbid twist to that one.
Right. No spoilers.
Maybe still worth listening to.
So check that out if you want background for the pursuit of a death-proof car. But what we'd like to do today is something a little different and walk through these 9 cars. This is based on a study that was conducted by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety.
And that was done as part of the Highway Loss Data Institute, is that right?
Yeah, nail on the head. So one thing that we learned in our episodes on Hell's Highway, in a great point that you made, was that dying in a crash has become much less likely over time, because although we have higher performance vehicles, we have much higher safety standards.
Yeah, this becomes a little bit complicated because we're talking about statistics.
Yeah.
And statistics are inherently difficult because we have more drivers on the road. The vehicles are becoming safer, but there's also a trend for these things, for the deaths to decline up until this point. From the last 9 years, I believe here in Georgia, we've had a decline of highway deaths.
Uh-huh.
And this year, for whatever reason, and I think we already know the reason, there's a 25% increase in highway deaths. Now, we've had a listener that wrote in a long note, and I can't read it here right now. It's too long. We'll have to get – that might be its own episode, as a matter of fact. And we'll dive into that. But Art D. wrote in and kind of just in a nutshell said something like, it was kind of surprised to hear you think that, 33,000 – people dying per year is a lot, and that's, the number here in the United States.
Right.
Each year, it's like 33,000. Mm-hmm. He's saying that, prior to, let's say, the 1980s, the numbers were closer to like 50,000 per year, and that's with fewer drivers on the road. So the percentages were far higher as far as fatalities go. So, but there's a lot of other information in that note from Art, and I've read it all. It's very, very interesting stuff. We're going to have to talk about that someday soon.
Yeah.
For sure. And, as a matter of fact, we also said that we have kind of a bit of an inside connection now with the producer or the director of that documentary, Hell's Highway. Remember the director of that?
Lives in Atlanta and actually knows one of our coworkers.
Yeah, the coworker that sits immediately next to me. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, we may have an interview coming up sometime soon with that person.
But, yeah, with Brett Wood.
Yeah, we can investigate all that. Tell you what, how about this? I've got stats that are current for today.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, through the last few months, I guess, ever since that highway safety films episodes, or the episodes, I guess, the 3 that we talked about these, we had kind of a count up, an unfortunate count up of the number of deaths here just in Georgia. And I believe we were right around 465 on May 19th. I saw a number, and this is shocking, Ben. It shocks me every time. I don't know why it does, because I know it's climbing at such an alarming rate. But I saw the number on June 30th. Now, today is – we're recording this episode the day that we're going to release it. So
July 2nd.
July 2nd.
Yep.
I saw this number on June 30th. So just, 2 days ago. 3 days ago? Is that 2, 3? The number was up to 620. on June 30th. Now, I saw the number again today because it's a holiday weekend, so they're putting the numbers up on the board to kind of promote safety and buckling seatbelts and all that. The number, remember, just 2 days ago, 620. Today, the number is 642. So that's an additional 22 people in just 2 days here in just Georgia. The number, I mean, when you really think about these numbers, internalize this, when you really think about it, it's incredible how fast this number is climbing. It's sad. It's very sad. And I know just statistics-wise, this is going to jump up even more after this big 4th of July weekend because a lot of people are on the road. So that's really sad. But and they said that of those that were killed on the Georgia highways, 62% of those were not wearing seatbelts. So this comes back to some of the stuff that we just were talking about in that the safety equipment is there. Some of it is proactive. Some of it is, I guess, passive. Mm-hmm. And you need to be proactive in buckling your seatbelt every time you get in the car. That's part of the way all of this works together. And I would bet that's part of the reason that some of these cars that we're going to see on this on the safest list are on the safest list. Because the driver's taking the time to do that.
Absolutely. It's funny that you mentioned that because I'm not sure if we're going to do it this episode, but I might have a few questions for you, Scott, and for you listeners about stereotypes of drivers, which, you know, it's a real thing. I am not immune to it, but I'm going to be interested to hear what people think about this. And you know exactly where I'm going with this, Scott,
very soon.
Why don't we just jump in and start giving some of these specifics? Where do you want to start at the top, start at the bottom?
Well,
it doesn't really matter because the numbers are all zero.
Let's start with the good. And I've got it kind of broken down in this way. The good is that there are nine vehicles, as we mentioned, that cover four model years between 2009 to 2012 with zero fatalities. That's in the driver's seat.
Right.
So zero
driver
fatalities. And this encompasses how many manufacturers? It looks like eight manufacturers. That's Kia, Lexus, Mercedes-Benz, Toyota that has two in the top nine.
Right.
Volvo, which would be expected, I guess.
Sure.
Audi, Honda, and Subaru. Those are all in the top nine. Now, of those top nine, and we'll tell you the specific make and model, or the model rather, in just a moment, but there are six SUVs, one minivan, and two sedans in that top nine.
Yeah, and it's not really a surprise for a list like this to be dominated by SUVs.
No.
SUVs are, in general, going to be safer from a fatality perspective. And don't get me wrong, a lot of SUVs, including some of those compact SUVs, can flip easily.
Yeah, they have a high rollover incident.
Right.
Incidents.
But they can be much safer in a collision for the people on the inside of the car. The drawback of that is, of course, if you are not in an SUV, but you are in a sedan or midsize thing or smaller, right? And you are struck by an SUV, then your car is definitely going to have a much higher chance of being damaged.
Yeah.
And you have a higher chance of being injured.
Again, we're talking with, you know, broad brush here.
Broad brush strokes.
When I say high rollover incidents, I guess you'd have to look up the Moose Test, which we also have an episode about. I thought that was one of our more interesting episodes that we've done in maybe the last year. How long ago was that? Was it 2 years ago, maybe even? It's been a while, but that was a fun one to do.
It can't have been 2 years.
Maybe not. I mean, time's slipping away from me, Ben. It's quickly going. But how about we just list actual safest vehicles? Now, I'll read here from the study, and again, this is coming from the Detroit Free Press back in January of 2015. If you want to follow along, you can find this.
And you know I'm going to interrupt at some point.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Okay. I want you to. All right, so of the nine safest models, six of those were SUVs, as I mentioned.
Right.
The Kia Sorento, the Lexus RX 350, the Mercedes-Benz GL, the Toyota Highlander, and the Toyota Sequoia, and the Volvo XC90. And then the other fatality-free models, you know, over those four model years were the Audi A4 four-wheel drive, of course, you know, the Quattro system, and the Honda Odyssey.
Right.
Ben.
Okay. So safe for whom? safe again, maybe for the passengers on the inside.
So you're saying how many deaths did that Honda Odyssey cause on the highway?
How many people? You know what? Let's take it further. What is the economic cost of everybody being late with those monsters on the road?
Okay. All right. So the I knew you were going to stop me right there.
Sorry.
So the Honda Odyssey is a minivan, of course. It's the right. only. I think that's
the only one.
The only minivan mm-hmm. on the fatality free list, and then at least the top nine, and the Subaru Legacy.
Yeah.
So that's a sedan. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, six SUVs, one minivan, two sedans, safest vehicles. A lot of that has to do with the high belt lines on these cars.
Right.
You'll notice a trend towards that. Even the Camaro and, of course, the Chrysler 300, that's one that I can think of just off the top of my head that has a very high belt line. A complaint of the drivers of those vehicles oftentimes is limited sight, you know, like limited visibility, I
right,
suppose.
Right, right, right.
So in the Camaro, I've heard, boy, this is too bad, too, because I'm a fan of the Camaro. I like mm-hmm. the new Camaro, the design, the remake, or redesign, I guess, since 2010. But they say that they're just really difficult to drive because of that limited visibility.
Yeah,
take
yeah.
a look at it. I mean, it makes, I say they look really cool because they do look kind of like, almost like they're chopped.
Mm-hmm.
Because that extremely high belt line. If you don't know what we're talking about, it's like where the door panel comes up to almost your shoulder height when you're sitting in the car, and then the windows are very kind of squished down, I guess.
Right, yeah. It's almost still, more like rectangular than they are would be square.
Yeah, it maintains a low roof line. It looks like, it gives it that that old hot rod chopped appearance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without really being that way. And the 300, when Chrysler came out with that, that was a dramatic example of that because we hadn't really seen that from a manufacturer in a long, long time, a factory car that looked like that. And mm-hmm. And again, this limited visibility thing is an issue with some drivers. Some are okay with it, I guess.
Well, one other thing, though, that is a fantastic point about this, and Road and Track and several other people have taken a closer look at this study. This is a little bit of good news. People are surprised while we are not surprised that this list is dominated by SUVs currently, it does speak very highly to the innovations that have come because just 8 years ago, there was not a single model of anything with a zero driver death rate. And then just, 10 years ago, SUVs actually had some of the highest rates of fatality.
Yeah. And here we are talking about a four year model year span.
Yeah.
2009 to 2012. That's significant. I mean, it's not just like 1 year and we're picking and choosing here. It's a broad period of time. And mm-hmm. I'm kind of interested that, you know, in maybe a few years, I wonder what's going to come out, you know, like what happened between 2012 and 2015. Like, did some of these maintain that death proof rating?
Right.
Or did they, I say death proof, but it's more like,
driver death proof.
Yeah. I mean, you have to put an asterisk next to all this.
right.
But
that's a good question.
So, okay, so it's reduced risk. But why is there reduced risk? And some of that is, all of you can guess, I would assume, is that it's improved safety technology. Mm-hmm. There's also another little element here that we're probably forgetting.
What's that?
We haven't mentioned this before, but it's not a fantastic economy right now. I mean, it's sort of on the rebound. They, you know, there's back and forth claims of whether we're doing okay, we're
right.
not doing okay. But the truth is, people are driving less due to the weaker economy. And I don't mean to drag numbers or politics into this. I'm not going to.
No, that's a very good point.
But people are driving less on average in the United States than they were even 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago.
Heck, I know I am. I used to, back when gas was lower, and I don't want to turn into a cantankerous old man about it, but yeah, back when gas was lower, you know this, I had that map of where I could drive in a day, and it was based on just driving time, not on cost. And
I still think that would be a fantastic app for somebody to develop, and maybe they have that. I don't know.
Oh, maybe they just came up with it. Hey, you guys, that's a Scott and Ben original.
And I just admitted that I haven't downloaded any apps because I'm an old guy.
Would this be the app that
if you could tell me one app right now that would save me time or money, I'll download it, Ben.
Waze.
No, I'm just kidding. I, you know what? I use, and I should clarify this because we did talk about that, and I do sound like the old guy, you know, the angry old guy, right?
Just a little bit.
All right. I've also told you that I will not touch a cell phone while I'm driving.
That's true. You have said that.
I won't answer it. I won't look at it, whatever.
Multiple times.
However, if my wife is in the passenger seat and she has all of her apps going, we will use the Waze app. So I use it secondhand, I guess.
You vicariously use Waze.
I'm a secondhand Waze user.
You're a beneficiary of Waze.
I am in some cases, but if I'm alone, I cannot do it. I know my limitations.
Well, it's also pretty unsafe. And Waze has this little warning that pops up when it says something along the lines of, uh-oh, it appears that you were driving, but you have the option to click passenger so that it knows you're the passenger. And I'm pretty sure that most of the people who click passenger are actually driving. Anyway, to move past that, it is true that that people are in general, at least in the States, driving less. And it's also true that the safety measures have made an impact, and that's probably the most visible impact, the most visibly reported impact. One of the big ones would be electronic stability control. Mm-hmm. That's something that lessened that high rollover incident.
Sure. Yep.
And then with that, I guess, decreased, it's easier to see the safety advantages that the weight and the height and the size of an SUV confer upon its driver.
Sure. And you know what? You hit on a point that's so important, is because that whole ABS package, I guess, that you get with an electronic braking system now, with modulated braking to different wheels, it's really remarkable what that system does for stability of the vehicle. So you get all these electronic stability programs and programs that stop wheel slip on certain wheels at certain times, or increase wheel speed, all that stuff put together, plus just the ABS system itself, and it all works in concert, and that really helps keep the vehicle, shiny side up. That's the important part, right?
Right, shiny side up.
And it's really important. So the other thing is that, the crash test results, the manufacturers that have to do the crash test.
Yeah.
Again, we've talked about this on our previous episodes, but there was a time when that really wasn't as critical to a manufacturer selling a vehicle on their showroom floor. People just didn't really seem to care much about it. They were doing crash tests.
Right.
However, they weren't posting the ratings. They weren't publicizing the ratings the day that the findings came out. It wasn't a huge deal if a car wasn't a 5-star crash-rated vehicle.
Right, right. Because car accidents are like cancer. It's going to be everybody else before it's me.
Yeah, that's the way people think. And it's not true, but that's the way people think. And going back even to the 80s, some of those economy cars that we've talked about, my old Ford Festiva. or how about that El Camino that you drove?
Oh, man.
Can you imagine? I mean, if they gave that thing a crash test or a crash rating, rather, it'd be probably one, like, or a half star.
I'll be honest with you, Scott. If somebody kicked that thing too hard, stuff fell off.
Well,
of it.
That's part of why there's so many fatalities in these older cars,
right?
Is because, the body inside absorbed most of the impact. But the crash test rate results are improving. And what we're seeing with these 9 vehicles is the real world results of that. And we're seeing that, these are safer vehicles because they've got things like accident or collision avoidance systems and departure warnings.
Yeah.
All that stuff that people are starting to use a little bit more. And this is the real world results of that.
Yeah. And this is an inspiring thing. However, this is only part of our story, and we have some more news to report. But first, this is the part, Scott, where you and I would usually do a word from a sponsor, but today we're going to do a little something different because we had an old friend contact us for a good cause.
Yeah, I'm going to help out an old friend here. How about that?
Yeah,
sounds good.
Let's
put it that way. And this is a listener that writes in often. His name is Glenn Beck.
The Glenn Beck.
The
Glenn Beck. Not the other guy you might have heard on the radio.
Not the radio guy.
No, no.
This is the actual Glenn Beck.
Mm, the real one.
Yeah, so Glenn Beck. And as you know, if you're a longtime Car Stuff listener, Glenn participates in something called Rally North America. That's a group founded, I think, in 2009. I'll get to that in just a minute.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
We have already talked about the latest rally that he's involved with, the Smoky Mountain Rally that's happening middle of July. It's happening very soon. And he wrote in recently. I just want to say that, Glenn is being very humble about this when he asks. So he says, I'm reluctant to mention this, but the Smoky Mountain Rally is only 3 weeks away, and actually now it's only about 2.5 weeks away.
Right. It starts on July 14th.
July 14th. Okay. So he says, we are disappointingly short of our goal. And if you have any way to bring your massive media influence to bear. He's maybe promoting us a little bit too much there. But he says, if you have any way to bring your massive media influence to bear, now would be a great time. In any case, I hope to see you on the rally, maybe in Roebling or maybe in Athens, something like that. And he said, adds a PS here. He says, I'll load up my iPhone with my favorite Car Stuff episodes to entertain my navigator. So I thought that was nice.
That's very kind. Thank you, Mr. Beck.
Glenn, of course, we are going to mention this again because this is a fantastic cause. We've only done this one other time this year. We do it, you know, for Glenn each year since we've known him, I guess.
Right? Sure.
And, Ben, maybe you can tell us the dates and then I'll tell you a little bit about, you know, who's the benefactor to this.
Right. Okay. So the dates are coming up pretty quickly. There's a pre-rally drivers meeting on July 13th. The actual rally is July 14th, starting in Knoxville, Tennessee. And it goes to July 16th, finishing in Savannah, Georgia. So that's from Knoxville to Savannah, with a stop in Hendersonville and Athens, respectively. This is a 3-day rally, but it's not just for the sake of rallying alone, right, Scott?
No. There's a benefactor to all this. It's for charity. The benefactor this year is Hope for the Warriors. And this program is something that serves post 9/11 active duty National Guard and Reserve service members and their families and the families of the fallen who've, you know, somehow sustained a physical or psychological wound in the line of duty. And that's a great cause. They're only about halfway there from what they need. They really need to get some extra donations. So if you would like to help out a fellow Car Stuff listener and you know, looking for a great charity to donate to, and I do this sometimes during the year, I'll look for three or four different things that, you know, I can, you know, put some money behind. This would be a good one. Again, it's a fellow Car Stuff listener. His name is Glenn Beck, and he is on Team Limer. And you can go on the site, and you can find Team Limer, and you can make a donation in your name to his team, you know, for the cause. So it's all very good. There's 80 teams of two people or more, lots of pony cars out there. If you're anywhere near the area, just go to the rally North America site to do all that, and you can also find out the dates. And Ben, this one's coming really close to us.
Right.
Really close.
Yeah, this is super close. This is going to be in Athens.
Yeah, in Athens on the second day, they're going to be at the Atlanta Dragway where they're going to do some drag racing in the evening.
Uh-huh.
And on day three, I know they're going to be at the Roebling Road Raceway, which is right around Savannah, Georgia. That's kind of far for us, but I'll tell you, I'm really considering heading out there for the evening of the day two, where they're at the Atlanta Dragway, because it's, you know, a late night type thing.
Sure.
Get to meet a Car Stuff listener, you know, see the Team Limer Mustang.
We've been talking about Limer Mustang
a few years.
Yeah.
But anyways, check out the Rally North America site. Make a donation if you can. Mm-hmm. And he would really appreciate it. Glenn would appreciate it. So would we.
And I'd like to go ahead and add one thing that I have been skeptical of in the past is when I hear something for a charity, I want to know more about the charity. So I'd like to give you guys some information to check out Hope for the Warriors, learn more about it. They're legit. They have a website called hopeforthewarriors.org. The kind of programs they do are pretty comprehensive. So they assist with career transition and education, scholarships for spouses, caregivers. There's the Camp Lejeune Marine family that they donate to, clinical health and wellness, sports and recreation, community military relations. They're advocates. I don't say this lightly. This is important stuff.
Yeah.
And it's for a good cause.
Yeah. And that's why we brought it up today. I mean, otherwise we don't typically do stuff like this, not for our own benefit. Of course, we do it for, for Car Stuff listeners and for great causes like this. So definitely check out the Rally North America site and do what you feel is right.
Yeah. And speaking of what feels right, I guess I don't feel great about it, Scott, but I do feel that we have a responsibility to mention the other end of the research that we found here, courtesy of the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety.
Sure. You want me to break it down like I did the first set?
Yes, and
okay.
Let's put a drum roll in when we get to the very bottom.
All right, so here's kind of the numbers breakdown of the bad side of this whole thing. Now there are three vehicles, the same four model years from 2009 to 2012 that have very high death rates. Now we're talking about, and this is a weird number, Ben. This is 100, more than 100 deaths per million registered vehicle years. Now, I find that as a strange, that's a strange way to say that, but it comes up over and over again in the study. This, it says per million registered vehicle years. Now, it seems to me like it'd be per miles, but anyways, let's get past that. And, again, four model years, 2009 and 2012. The manufacturers represented here, there are three different, and I'm actually going to give you the fourth one because it's very close to the, to that number of 100.
Okay.
So this is the bottom end. Kia, Nissan, Hyundai, and the, I guess, dishonorable mention in this case would be Chevy, and that's the one that's kind of on the bubble here. That's barely not making that that most unsafe. Now, one thing we should point out here is that there are two of those are mini cars, you know, classified as mini cars.
Right.
One of them is a small sedan. So you get the trend here is that the large or the the
mid-sized
vehicles and sedans and all that did very well in this test, and the mini cars or the very small sedans didn't do so well. All of them. I mean, it's, again, broad brush, but
sure.
But they all happen to be in the bottom four.
And that trend is not not easily dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a simple matter of physics and a matter of weight, height. It's very difficult to imagine that a well-built, larger vehicle would perform worse, would not perform as well as a well-built small vehicle.
That's true. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And you know, again, this goes back to people saying, I just feel comfortable in a bigger vehicle where I have a commanding view of the road and something that's higher up than everybody else. You know, your gut feeling is right in this case.
And
really.
Furthermore, let us consider that Kia has a car at the very top of the list and a car at the very bottom of the list.
That's a good point.
Which is, to me, just further underlines this point.
Yeah. So Kia is mentioned in the good and the bad. The other manufacturers don't turn up in either, I guess, in the, I don't know if that's the right way to say that. The other two manufacturers in the bottom end don't turn up in the top end.
Yeah, no Nissans or Hyundais.
No. So, okay, so Ben, maybe you can read the list, but these are vehicles that have death rates of more than 100 per million registered vehicle years. So what tops the list here?
Well, Scott,
or how do you want to read it? Backwards or forwards?
Let's go backwards. Let's end on the biggest one. And I'd like you to read the list, if that's okay.
Oh, no problem. Yeah. So the Hyundai Accent sedan, has a death rate of 120, deaths per million registered vehicle years. So the number represents that stat. All right. The number two on the list would be, the Nissan Versa sedan, and the number one, maybe we should get a drum roll here.
Perfect. Excellent drum roll.
Is the Kia Rio with 149 deaths per million registered vehicle years. So the Kia Rio, I hate to say stay away from it, but geez, the stats are pointing that way. Now, we did say that there was another vehicle that was right on the bubble, there on the edge.
Number four.
And it was a Chevrolet. You may already be able to guess this. This is the Chevy Aveo, which has 99 fatalities per million vehicle years. So the Chevy Aveo fell just below the 100 mark to make it onto that lowest list, I guess.
Right.
But it was really close.
So not only did the manufacturer Kia get to the very top of the list, but it also got to the very bottom, the Apex and the Nadir.
Yeah.
As you said, Scott, this doesn't necessarily mean you should not drive these vehicles. We're just telling you how they performed. And there's been talk about, it's strange because the Aveo already had kind of a bad name or rumors swirling around it. So the Aveo to me is one of the least surprising.
Yeah, I think so. And you can look at the size of some of these cars and kind of figure that. But then look at a vehicle like the Smart Car.
Yeah.
And the Smart, you know, like the Smart for two.
Sure.
And that score is reasonable. I don't know where it fell on this list because this study doesn't have it there, but, it didn't make the bottom of the list.
Right.
It falls somewhere in the middle. And I know that, from reading about that car, we've done podcasts about that vehicle and, the Tritium safety cell that surrounds the vehicle that's partially visible on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
All that, you know, where they do the offset collisions with full size sedans. And it holds up really, really well. So, you know, there's some surprises as well, you know, when you look at small cars.
Yeah. And we do have another point that we should make just before we wrap anything up here, the improvements made on an individual car, right, no matter what those are, a great safety cell, roll bars, electronic gadgets, sensing abilities, even to the point where an autopilot would take over the car, right, in an accident or terrible situation. No matter how much of that individual stuff happens, a death on the road will still be entirely possible unless there are serious changes to the infrastructure of the road or the way that traffic itself is conducted. And I don't know if those will ever occur. You know, we get information from people sometimes talking about the utopian future of autonomous vehicles, which is always just eternally around the corner, right?
Sure.
But I would say that kind of change can also create new species of problems. So for right now, Scott, as much as I hate to say it, I don't think this streak of these nine cars is sustainable. I think that something will happen.
I totally agree with you, and there's just no way, as we said, I don't know if we can say this over and over enough, that there's no way for a manufacturer to account for every situation.
Mm-hmm.
There are people, this is horrible, there are people that are sitting in traffic and, you know, lightning strikes a tree nearby and this, you know, 200-year-old oak tree falls in the car and kills the driver and the occupant or the passenger. That has happened here in Georgia within the last couple of years, I know it.
Yes.
Happened right in downtown Atlanta, some of the mm-hmm. giant old trees. How could you ever account for something like that happening to your vehicle when you say that, yeah, it's fine when it hits this barrier at 35 miles an hour? But what do you do when you're sitting there and, you know, several tons of oak tree land on top of it? There's nothing you can do about that.
You don't have time to roll out.
Things like that. I mean, that's a pretty extreme situation, but I mean, look at some of these accidents that happen on the highway. You'll say it's like a freak accident. Well,
sure.
That happens over and over and over again. I mean, there are strange things that happen, but they do happen. And you just can't account for every situation. No manufacturer can do that.
Oh, you know, this makes me want to ask our listeners for a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Just if this interests you guys, let me know on Facebook or Twitter, where we're CarStuffHSW. Let us hear your stories about the questions we're about to ask. One, what was the strangest or weirdest accident you've ever been in? I think that's interesting because some people have accident stories that end up being hilarious sometimes, you know.
It can happen.
You know, when my family, everybody has some story about an overturned truck carrying something ridiculous up the mountain, you know,
like sure.
chickens or,
And then the roundup that ensues.
Right. You know, it's always like one thing that the truck is carrying.
Yeah. I understand.
You gotta hunt down
those chickens. Let's limit that to personally involved in it. So it's not like a friend of a friend or, you know.
Right. Happened to you.
Happened to you. It has to be first person account.
And then the other question, which is a little bit darker, is what do you think is the most dangerous car? And of all the cars ever made, what's the most dangerous? Cause we have seen and researched and in some cases ridden in some real lemons.
Yeah.
But like what make of car or what, you know, what specific vehicle?
What do you perceive to be the most dangerous vehicle?
Right.
And why? And
right.
And be specific, not just say the cars of the 1950s or the cars of the 1970s.
No.
Be
yeah.
specific. I mean, if you were in a real rattle trap of a car, a real tin can of a car.
Yeah.
And, or you notice something that, you know, is just glaringly awful about the thing. I mean, it had, you know, a steering wheel that has a bullet-shaped horn button.
Right,
you know,
yes.
Something like that.
I mean,
just tell us what that is. I mean, be specific.
Right. And, of course, you know, my answer is not going to be Honda Odyssey. It's not the most dangerous car. It's just, well, maybe over the long term, if we don't stop building them. No, I'm kidding. I am so kidding.
I'm going to have to put an end to your Honda Odyssey slamming. We have to wrap it up.
Yeah, we have to wrap it up. We have to go. If you would like to check out any of the episodes that we have mentioned earlier in the show today, then you can listen to one and all of them on carstuffshow.com completely for free. A big fat zero. That's my favorite number. And if you want to write to us with those opinions and you say, guys, Twitter, Facebook, not so much my thing, you can speak to us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.